What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 3 of season 2 of Mental Dive, the podcast, where we talk anything and everything, the psychology of coaching. I'm your host, Taylor Staden, and my job is to help athletes, coaches, and teams maximize their mindset through mental performance consulting. So I help them work on areas like confidence, resiliency, consistency, and more. And so thank you so much for tuning in to episode 3. If you've been following along, you would have hopefully listened to episode 2. And I highly recommend you do, with Dr. Catherine Tamminen, where we discussed how you can optimize the car ride home. So if you haven't checked that one out yet, please do go back. It's a great listen. And there's some awesome vids and techniques in there for parents and coaches to help optimize that really crucial time for athlete development. But today's a fun one, because today I get to interview somebody who originally started as a mentor, but has later really turned out as a friend for me, in Zoran Stojković. So Zoran is incredibly passionate about the field of sports psychology and mental performance. But what's interesting is that he actually has started to carve out a niche for himself in culture. I think culture is interesting because we always hear it from the media, and we hear it from both strong and not so strong teams. We have a really strong team culture here. The culture's awesome. Oh, it's a toxic culture. We have all heard it. A championship culture. That's something you very commonly hear when teams win a championship, is a lot of them talk about their culture. But how do you actually define your team culture? Like, what does that mean? How can you cultivate it? And so that's what Zoran is going to do for us today. He is going to take us into a deep dive into how you can start to cultivate your team's culture, and how he's done that and continues to do that with his clientele in both sport and business. So I'm looking forward to getting into it. And again, if anybody wants to reach out to me, if you have any feedback on the podcast, if you'd be interested in learning more about how I can help you and your team perhaps reach their goals, please do reach out. You can best reach me at taylorstaden1@gmail.com, or reach out to me on social at Taylor Staden. That's at TaylorStaden. All this information is also in the description of the podcast. So just go in there after, click it, hit me up. Let's get it going. Anyways, without further ado, Zoran Stojković. Joining me today is a guest who has had a major influence on my development so far as a young professional. To put it in perspective, if it were not for him, I likely would have never traveled halfway across the world for grad school. I also likely would have not known what a mello macchiato is, or now expect a water to come with my coffee. A passionate practitioner running a consulting business named Kizo Performance. And as part of this, he is also the mental performance consultant for the Pacific FC organization, a professional soccer club in the Canadian Premier League, as well a fellow podcaster who is passionate about cultivating culture within different teams, groups, and organizations. Zoran, how are you today, my friend?
Taylor, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. How's everything out in BC?
Yeah, things are good. Look, I mean, things are looking better. Last summer was kind of sad. Streets were pretty empty, obviously, with everything going on. But it's great to see people out and about. The restaurants are packed. Sporting events are happening. Pacific has the first home game next week. So that's exciting. And it's going to be nice to see some fans in seats and get the boys some support for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Is it full capacity or is it partial capacity?
Close. I want to say 75%. Five out of 6,000 fans.
Right on. It's so nice to see fans getting back in the stands too. Just from a morale perspective.
Massive. Yeah. Massive. Yeah.
Yeah. So Zoran, one way I like to always start off the podcast, and I know you know this because you've listened to some of my podcasts, is I would love for you to tell us a bit about your why and about yourself.
For sure. So my why is to help people unleash their inner greatness by applying behaviors and habits that that help them get there. So inner greatness has different meanings to different people. It's about being the best version of ourselves that we can be consistently. And the way that I do that is through training mental skills and culture in organizations. So I work with leaders on setting up culture in ways that is authentic and in alignment with what they want to create and the results they want to achieve, the standards they want to set. And then I also work with performers in athletics and the performing arts on the skills to be the best version of themselves and remove any blockers. Because I think each of us has these blockers as we perform. And the important thing is to have the mental skills to actually do that. And I have my master's in sports science, in sport and exercise psychology. And sport has been a big passion forever. I've coached. So I've seen that side of things. I've been coached. I've played in high pressure environments and tournaments. And so right now I'm really passionate about high performing cultures and what makes them tick and how to give people the tools and the support and set up the systems and the culture so that that group of people accomplishes the mission they want to accomplish.
You mentioned culture. Okay. And I find team culture to me, I find can be a bit of a buzz term at times, while often overlooked or not really properly understood. Could you tell us about how you define team culture?
You hear culture defined in a lot of different ways, Taylor. And in a nutshell, we're all part of cultures and we're all part of subcultures. When you think about the world, there's different cultures that are thousands of years old. So that is a culture. But when you also think about it in the most basic unit of people, of organizing is a family. A family has its own cultures, has its own culture, has its own values, has its own behaviors and norms. What's common about the macro level and this micro level of culture is the fact that when you enter this environment, whatever it is, whether you land on the Canadian soil with your passport or whether you enter a home of a family, there's an invisible handshake that happens. There's some sort of norms. And the more time you spend in that culture and in those cultures, we can influence it and it influences us. I think culture ultimately is like a train. And I'm going to unpack this analogy as we go further and further. It's a train because we're each part of, I can enter your train for certain parts of my life. And this train has its own path. And there's people who influence the path of the train and what tracks it takes more than others. But even being a passenger on the train, it's not passive. Everybody influences culture.
You mentioned the invisible handshake. And I've never heard that analogy before. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I heard that from Michael Gervais. And when he's talking about just about work with teams. And the way I look at it is the invisible handshake is just a really palpable way to talk about norms. And the social norms that each of these groups have, right? Like I was talking about a family, mm-hmm. or you could talk about a team where it's people from different walks of life who have a shared mission and objective. Like you could think about a basketball team or a hockey team. And these players work together, operate together as different personalities. The invisible handshake is essentially what are we okay with and what are we not okay with? And by entering and being part of this team, here's the behaviors that you're agreeing to. So the invisible handshake can be, you know, on both sides. It could be part of toxic cultures where when you enter this culture, you're okay with doing certain things. And some of these things may be toxic and maybe the culture is terrible, but by entering this culture, you're doing the invisible handshake and saying, yes, I agree to these norms and I continue to support this. But there's the other side of it as well. Really teams that are flourishing, teams that are connected, teams that are awesome spaces to work and quality where people develop in quality ways and go towards their goals, that team has a different type of invisible handshake, but that happens. And so yeah, that's how I look at it, the invisible handshake.
Really interesting. Again, thank you for explaining that. And so you mentioned now you have, let's say, a toxic team culture and you have an optimal team culture. And these both involve different norms and, let's say, different invisible handshakes. What are some ways that maybe you could begin to shift what is a toxic culture towards a more optimal culture? How do you change that invisible handshake?
It starts with becoming aware of what the invisible handshake means, because the meaning behind the handshake is big. And so what that means is really doing a culture audit and saying, listen, let's see what's going on. Let's actually measure culture. And that's notoriously hard. It's culture is this subjective feeling, that's okay. It's fine. You walk into some cultures and they're buzzing, it's vibrant, and it kind of carries you. Like if you go to the city of Boston and you're walking around, you feel it. It's in the culture of the city. There's a lot of possibility. There's innovation, right? That city has a culture. It's very similar when you walk into organizations. And a part of shifting it is having everybody be on the same page and having many people being part of creating that and setting that up. And by that, I mean, what are the behaviors that we want to be about? And values, I think values is great, but I think what I've come to understand is values are very hard to grasp and they're not actionable. And so it's great to have these words on the wall, like we want to be respectful and tolerant and we want equity, like that's all great. But it's really about when you walk into that environment as an outside observer, what are you noticing? What behaviors are you noticing? And we can change the behaviors, right? And a part of that is really about having people buy into it, because you can have, it's not really about copy pasting cultures. The All Blacks have a great culture. Google has a great culture. Microsoft has a great culture. Apple's got awesome culture. Warby Parker has great culture. Zappos has a cool culture, but it's not, Taylor, it's not about just copy pasting things. Maybe you take bits and pieces, but it's also contextual, right? I mean, sports teams can't just copy what the All Blacks do or what Greg Popovich does or what Bill Belichick does or what Pete Carroll does. It's not about that. It's really about looking at the situation you're in, being where your feet are and saying, listen, here's what I'm noticing. I'm noticing our athletes aren't engaged. And here's how I'm noticing that. X, Y, Z. And typically, when we speak the truth and when we say the things we're noticing, it gives other people permission to do the same. And other people are going to nod their heads because everybody knows this. But sometimes people are afraid to say it because, especially if it's one of the more toxic cultures that I mentioned. And so that goes back to the invisible handshake, Taylor, because it's really that's a start. That's the foundation. Let's do an audit. Let's see where we're at right now.
There's a lot to unpack there. But one thing that really stood out is you talked about this culture audit, right? And trying to measure one's culture, which, like you said, can be very, very difficult. And there's no set equation per se. But then you also discussed how you mentioned rather that buy-in was a really important aspect of, you know, changing culture or starting to shift people's actions and perhaps values towards a certain goal in mind for a culture. When you look at, let's say, a sports team and you think of the head coach, you know, the head coach plays, in my opinion, is usually has most say in these kind of things. What role does the head coach play in developing and fostering, or should I say cultivating, a team's culture?
Nice. Good choice of words there, Taylor. Cultivating is, it's a good way to put it, because the coach does cultivate the culture. of the team, but he's not the only one that does it. He or she is not, they're not the only ones that do it. You can go top down, you can go bottom up. And I think both are important. I don't think it's an either or. There has to be buy-in from the key players on the team. If these, because these key players are the ones that can get the ship going in one direction or the other. I'll give you an example. I know of players in the MLS who had that kind of charisma that if a mental skills coach or a nutritionist came in to do a session in the change room with the team, they could be the ones that say, guys, let's get out of here. I don't like this. And the whole team would leave. So imagine having a player like that on board, right? How much that actually helps. And so I think that's an important starting place. And where the coach becomes important, Taylor, is having a great relationship and rapport with those players. Because those players, each player affects a couple of other guys, kind of like paying it forward. They all affect two or three players. Some guys affect five or six players. They're constantly being watched. So if they're modeling the behaviors that the coach wants to, and the coaching, I'm going to say the coaching staff, want to multiply and grow, that's great. That's the starting place. Of course, the coach sets a direction. The coach sets the targets. The coach is very important because they're one of the key decision makers when it comes to drafting players, player selection. And one of the bigger, I want to say what I've come to understand from interviewing leaders on my podcast is one of the biggest protectors and influencers on culture is actually who you let into the environment. And that's where the coach is important. Because as I heard a saying once, it's better to have 1,000 enemies outside the tent than to have one inside the tent. So you want to be very selective as a coach. I think coaches and leaders and anybody who is involved in culture must be selective. But to be selective, it's important to know what sort of environment you'd like to create. And who you're going to allow in. But when you think about the Canadian snowbirds, for example, they were flying over Victoria actually quite recently doing some training exercises. And the people that decide who comes in and who doesn't, like if they need a new pilot on the left side of the formation, they have people come and try out. And the people that make the decision, Taylor, is the pilots. They're the ones that actually make the decision. So in a similar way, I think players, we're talking about selection and the importance of the coach, the players, when somebody comes into on trial and to meet people and to, you know, to join training, to see if it's a good fit, the coach has to ask his key players, but also keep in mind that if somebody is playing my position and they're coming in, I might be a little bit threatened. So I might also notice things and say things that aren't very objective. But at the end of the day, if this player is to come in, the guy's got to get along with the other guys in the change room, because, you know, and be okay going to tournaments and rooming together. And as we've, you know, open up travel, that's key, right? And the players, it's really about the players. The coach needs somebody in a certain position or wants somebody for their qualities as a leader or whatever. But the players, it's really the players that are going to be spending a lot of time with this person. So that's how I look at it. The coach has a very important role. And it's not always easy. Hey, Taylor, I've seen coaches get kicked out of teams. Right. And it's when the change room becomes really quiet and the head coach doesn't command the respect of his athletes anymore, and they're not buying into his philosophy and his vision, a good club will let the coach go. In those times, it's crucial for anybody who works in a sport organization to pay attention to the athlete whispers. And this comes from a colleague down in the U.S., Nadine Dubina. She used to work at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, and she's now at West Point Academy. Mm. And she talked about these athlete whispers, and that's the after meeting meetings. What are the athletes saying after the meeting is done? Maybe they're like, oh God, this coach is awesome. This coach is great. I'm on board with this. Or maybe they're saying some other stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you're explaining, and thank you for the very thorough explanation, when you're explaining your perspectives on this, it reminded me a lot of a research paper I came across recently where they interviewed different Western Hockey League scouts on what intangibles they look for in players in the drafting process. And they were actually talking about how very similar what you said about the analogy with bringing people into the tent is that they come to realize that, in their opinion anyways, it's usually not a good idea to try to draft a player just based on talent if you know they have a very toxic, perhaps personality, because they believe that it only takes one or two of them to ruin your team's culture. And so I found that very, very interesting. But now you also discuss how it's important to know these athlete whispers and who holds the most weight with what they say in the room. And my mind immediately went to the use of a sociogram, understanding what players are connected with which. Is a sociogram maybe something that you've used to help maybe in some of these culture audits you've been a part of, or what value do you see in that?
Yeah, so I think the sociogram has its space. And just for anybody out there who doesn't know what that is, that's basically, if you were to do a sociogram, you would put these questions out to people and say, who are the top three players you like on the team? Who are the top three players you hate on the team or dislike on the team? Who are the top three people you'd want to room with? Who are the top three people you would least like to room with? Who do you like to play with? So you're giving both sides of it. And I think with using sociograms, it's one way to figure out to do a culture audit. I don't think it's the only way. I think it's one source of information. And I haven't used that particularly. I've used the roles grids before, where you know, you look at there's different informal roles on a team. There's a person who's the DJ. There's a person who's the comedian. There's a person who's maybe a spark plug, or there's somebody who's maybe the Hulk. Like maybe they're really emotional and that dissipates negatively in the team. And so putting everybody's names on top of the, you know, kind of all the players on top of the grid, just being like, hey, what three people fit this role? I've used that before with sociograms. I think that can backfire if it's not used properly. It's not just a template that you download and you use it. I think it has to be used very artfully. And for that reason, I've been cautious of using those types of things. You can do a culture audit in a lot of different ways. I think observation is important, you know, objective observation of behavior, seeing how coaches are communicating with their athletes. Yeah, you could see a lot of that because like imagine watching Phil Jackson coach. Here's a guy who he's got lots of books. He's got a great, I don't want to say attitude, but I want to say a great personality. And what he did really well, and this is where the culture, you're going to see how this links up with the culture audit. What he did really well, Taylor, is he would tailor his approach to each player, right? So I think that's big. I think that's big because we can't treat everybody the same. Equity actually isn't a good thing because some players communicate differently. Some players need to be, you know, need a shorter leash, and some players need to be let go. And it's about knowing when to let those players go and when to reel them back in so that they're performing at their best. Yeah. As doing a culture audit in a sports organization, you can ask the people. Like I think one-on-one conversations are big, especially if there's rapport. You know, coming in as a newbie and doing that is a little bit different. But as a head coach who's new to an organization, I would definitely have a 15-minute chat or 20-minute chat with everybody. And it's not about the players only. There's office staff, there's admins, they're part of the culture. And often in sports, those two are separate, aren't they? You have the sports staff and the biomechanists, sports psychologists, you know, the strength and conditioning coaches. You have the coaching staff and they got their own little vibe. And then you got the office staff. No, that's off. It's about really connecting that and bringing everybody on board. And then when it comes to the audit, upon realizing that a culture is where it is, I think it's really about presenting that to people and asking what they want to do. And in big organizations, you can't ask everybody. In smaller organizations of like 20 or 15, you know, 20, 30 people, you can bring everybody into a room and have a conversation and facilitate it in a way that different people have a voice in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Zoran, what I'm gathering from what you explained is that it very much lines up with this like new age style of coaching, where it's no longer this kind of a blanket style approach. You try to really cater your approach to each individual player. Like you said, some players need longer leashes, some need shorter leashes. Some like to be communicated this way. Others like to be communicated in that way. And I think that's a really important takeaway for many coaches, is just that, especially with this new age of players, the old style of coaching just isn't really received well often with new players.
Yeah, for sure. It's important to, as people have evolved, as society has evolved, or I don't want to say evolved, I'm going to say changed. There's certain things that always change, and there's certain things that, you know, things always change, but things always stay the same. Mm-hmm. So at the core, people are still people, and they're very similar to what they've been for thousands of years. However, there's things that are slightly different. People communicate in different ways. Players, I think it's really important for a head coach, if really wants to connect with players, to be on Instagram. Like, that's not being on those platforms, or maybe communicating with players by email. That's just going to create more of that distance and more of that chasm.
Yeah.
But being, you know, wishing players happy birthdays on Instagram and putting up a post, like that's examples of great coaching, you know, and because that speaks to players, everybody uses it. And so that new style of coaching for sure, Taylor, is, it's also about being authentic. It's not just about copying Phil Jackson by, you know, reading 11 Rings or watching The Last Dance. It's really about being authentic, and each coach and each leader asking themselves, what are my personal values? What's my philosophy? And that philosophy has come about because of the experiences that person has had. Maybe somebody grew up on the streets playing hockey, and they grew up in a really poor family, right? That will have shaped their experiences. That will have their successes, failures, highlights, and mistakes will have shaped who they are, their relationships with their family. So it's about, who am I as a person? And then starting with that and really communicating that. And even in that, I don't want to say interview, but in that scouting, in that trial, being upfront about it and saying, listen, here's who I am. Here's what I expect. Here's the non-negotiables for me. Here's the invisible handshake we're going to be taking if you're going to enter my team. And being upfront about it so that people aren't blindsided about it is huge.
Really having that self-awareness about who you are as a person and maybe what your strengths are as well as your limitations. Again, I agree. I think it'd be really helpful in just knowing, you know, what works for you, right? Because again, like you look at two very different style coaches, doesn't mean either style is necessarily wrong. It's just about maybe that just what works for them, what makes them tick, what they understand or what they've come to know per se throughout these experiences, like you mentioned. I know we discussed how important it is to have that self-awareness to what works for you, as well as to really understand that it's not so much about just this one tool fix all approach. But let's say, generally speaking, what is one tool you think that a coach could apply very practically to help begin to create that cultural shift in their group?
Asking questions and listening. That tool, that's a tool that's free. You don't need to download an app for it. we can all get better at it. There's great books out there. The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay Stanier is amazing for anybody who's a coach in different, and I think he uses that term very loosely. And he teaches you how to ask really good questions. And then The Advice Trap is his second book. And I'm a huge fan. I mean, and he's writing a third one. I'm a massive fan of his work. And I think that the listening, like you always hear this, like active listening, and it's like, but I don't think people actually know what that means. It's really about asking open-ended questions and actually listening and pausing. So there's been good research in teaching, and teachers are coaches just in a different way. Like you could, it's just a different word for it, but they're still coaching somebody through something, and they're coaching somebody to level their skills up in a certain area, right? Teachers who paused for 5 seconds after asking a question actually got better responses. So I think oftentimes, you know, when you do the rapid fire and you go, oh, hey, how's your day? Or like, oh, would you, so we're not patient enough. So we're not listening. The listening piece is asking a question and pausing, because it takes people time to process, and different people process things at different speeds. And not everybody can give an answer in 2 seconds. So it's really about that. And the listening is around, I mean that more loosely as well, not just listening with our ears, but also observing and using our senses to notice things and to, by asking those questions and listening, having those real conversations, let's say the things that we actually feel. Let's say the things that we actually want. And that's what brings teams together. And I think in North America, that's not a very typical thing. It's more common, and the default mode is for people to be afraid to speak what they feel. And in different cultures in the world, it's even more so. And there's cultures like some of the European countries where people are more open, and you can create a subculture within your team, within your organization, where that is the norm, where people are open, and you create a space where people talk and listen. So just to sum it up, listening and asking really great questions is a tool that's free, that is definitely going to level up the results and performance of any team that that a coach is working with.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And I think, you know, what you mentioned about listening is really important, because I think a lot of people don't really know what it means to listen. You know, like you said, I think there's people who listen, and then I think there's people who are simply waiting to speak. And those are two very, very different things. Zoran, one, I must say, cultivate your culture. I've really, really enjoyed it so far. And I've seen your growth, and you know, you've talked about active listening and asking effective questions. You've been doing that yourself, and you've been doing a really good job. So I praise you for that. Could you tell the listeners a bit about Cultivate Your Culture and what the goal of the podcast is?
Taylor, Cultivate Your Culture is a movement. It's a movement to change the world. And when I was having the idea for the podcast, I remember I was talking to you, and you were one of the big believers, and I was this close to not doing it. I almost talked myself out of it. And I'm so happy you were there as an accountability buddy, as a support, as a person to have a phone call with. I know I picked your brain on the podcasting, and you've been a big supporter. So I really appreciate that. And this pod wouldn't have been, like, even the title, you're the one that actually suggested that title. So props to you, man. What I wanted to say is the pod is really for leaders in any space, any avenue, who want to level up their culture. Season one, I asked every guest the same questions. And I did that because I wanted to see what are the red threads? What are the commonalities in what people are going to say? And those episodes tended to be 45 minutes to an hour. And I had Miss Val Condos, who's a TED Talk speaker. She was the coach of the century. She was mentored by John Wooden at UCLA, and she was an absolute gem. And I had people, I had like three or four Olympians. I had people who are in Tokyo right now working on culture. And it was really great to have those conversations. The podcast is really about, it's all about culture and what it is, what it isn't, what it takes to build it, what it takes to destroy it, what books people have found helpful. And as a companion to the podcast, there's also a blog post on the website as well. And for season two, I'm going to be shifting things a little bit. So season two comes out September 2021, and it's going to be either 10 or 12 episodes. I haven't decided yet. And they're going to be 30-minute episodes, and each person is going to get different questions. And I'm still working on the guest list. I have some, I don't want to name drop here, but there's some really cool guests that could be coming onto the podcast. And then to wrap it up, in December 2021, there's going to be a culture summit. These guests are going to come on and actually present live, and people are going to get to learn from them some more and ask them questions. And so what I'm really hoping to do with this, Taylor, what my mission is really to create a ripple in the world of leadership and to start to shift culture, because the way culture has been done typically by default isn't actually great. And it's not about investing more money into it. It's really about doing things slightly differently and sharpening the ways we're doing things. And that's free. And that's my whole mission with the podcast. And I absolutely love talking about culture.
I am pumped. I did not know you're going to announce the summit on the pod. I'm excited. Good. I know we've had some conversations about that as well, and I'm excited to attend. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yep.
And so, Zoran, again, I really appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure having you on. For anybody listening, I am going to plug Zoran's socials, his podcast, all that jazz in the description of the podcast for easy access. So if you want to go check him out, I would highly suggest and recommend. Anyways, Zoran, have a great rest of your day, and we will connect soon, as we always do.
All right, Taylor, thank you for taking the time to have me on, and keep doing the great work you're doing, man. Like you're creating a ripple in the world of sports and performance, and with all the content you're putting out, and I applaud you, because I know it's not easy to keep it going. And some days it's easier than others. So I really applaud you, and I look forward to connecting again.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Wow. I always feel so refreshed after having a call with Zoran. Another big shout out goes out to Zoran of Kizo Performance for joining me for episode 3 of season 2 of Mental Dive, the podcast, the psychology of coaching. Listen, anybody out there who's listening right now, I really, truly hope you took something away today that you can start to apply tomorrow with your team. Or maybe if you're eager, as early as today. Anyways, everyone, take care. Have a wonderful rest of your day, evening, or whatever time you're listening to. You know what I mean. And I will see you next week when I interview Dr. Mark Bruner about how you can develop cohesive teams. I'll see you there.